Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TryTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Well, it feels good. It's preparation is a big part of this game. You know, you got to spend time together, I think. But we're fortunate that we had almost 100% turnout. And we got better each day. We did a lot of strategic things to focus on every day, and we got better. So I'm very happy with that. And the closing message is going to be personal. You know, we don't talk about the things we say in team meetings, but the expectations are rising now. You know, we proved that we can compete in the AFC West. You know, we proved we can win on the road. And now we've got to prove we can win at a much higher level. And we got a great schedule. We got a very difficult schedule opening season. So be smart with your time and continue to train like a champion.
That's Raiders head coach John Gruden speaking to the media on Wednesday, talking about rising expectations, a championship work ethic, closing out games, thinking bigger. And if there's a theme that came out of Raiders OTAs, which concluded this week with the three-day mandatory mini camp, is that expectations are real and they're growing and they're legitimate and they're genuine. And obviously, it's all talk until you get on the field and prove it. But remember when I told you guys and have told you guys that even at the Raiders' highest point last year, when they were 6-3, just talking to some people behind the scenes, people that know, you could draw your own conclusions. And even at that point, when it looked good, when they were sitting at 6-3 and the playoffs seemed within reach, the message consistently was lots of work still needs to be done. A lot of work needs to be done. Got to figure out, got to get better on the defensive line. Got to create more turnovers. Got to do better on third down. It's not quite there yet. There was a self-awareness, even when everyone was heaping accolades on the Raiders. Oh, they're 6-3. Oh, they've got a favorable schedule coming up. Oh, they're gonna make a legit run at the playoffs. While all that talk was happening on the outside, from the inside, not so fast. Lots of work that still needs to be done. It was an honesty. It was, like I said, a self-awareness. There were no delusions that the Raiders were better than what they were. In fact, there was an awareness and an understanding that this is great being 6-3, but it doesn't change the fact that a lot of work still needs to be done. I told you guys that at the time. I've repeated it during this offseason, and that was happening in real time. Sometimes behind the scenes, you kind of get a better feel for things and an idea for things and a little bit more honesty. You know, it's part of what we do in the media, and it doesn't always show up in quotes by, you know, people and there's no blaring headlines. It's called kind of getting the background, kind of getting the feel for things in, you know, behind the scenes a little bit. And a lot of times it's a more honest and frank assessment, you know. But I say that to say this. While there was that self-awareness last year, even at the highest moments, the highest peaks, the same could be said now. And there is a growing confidence behind the scenes. There is an acknowledgement that the infrastructure is in place, The talent is on hand to make this a pretty special year. I'm not saying that they're thinking that they're going to win the Super Bowl or anything like that. If you're a professional athlete, you always have to think along the highest terms, right? So everybody's goal is to win the Super Bowl. You don't approach a season without that, like, obviously being something that you're shooting for. But, you know, you're also, there's also an honesty, a self-awareness, and, you know, so you have to, you know, when you're really looking at yourself in the mirror, you have to be honest about it. And the honest answer that I'm getting now is, and the sense is, the Raiders feel like they, all that work that they were talking about last year that needed to be done, some of the areas that they needed to get strengthened and areas where they needed to get better, there's a quiet and a growing confidence that they were able to do just that. And they've put themselves in a much better position this year. And therefore, the expectations, forget about outside. That's not what John Gruden was talking about. John Gruden wasn't saying the expectations are rising for the Raiders on the outside. In fact, if you were to talk to a lot of national pundits, there aren't that. The expectations for the Raiders aren't, you know, all that high. It would be a surprise to people outside of Henderson if the Raiders made a serious run at the playoffs. But not that any of that matters, because it doesn't. What matters is how they feel about themselves inside the building. And from the coaching staff to players that I've talked to, there is an awareness of something special can happen this year. By the way, you're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor. It's a Friday, another hot Friday here in Las Vegas. You're brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We want your calls, 702-365-9200, whatever questions you might have, whatever thoughts you might have. You know, if you're listening and you want to chime in about what I'm talking about right now, feel free, 702-365-9200. But, you know, I'm done this a long time. And there's power in words. And a lot of times, like I said, it's not so much what you see on Zoom and what's going on there. Although, you know, guys are being honest, no question about it. But, you know, they're in front of cameras and they know the whole world is listening. A lot of times what you're getting is kind of cookie cutter type things and, you know, not trying to create headlines and that sort of stuff. It's more behind the scenes where, you know, if you have a good relationship and do your job correctly and develop a sense of trust, you're going to hear the real deal. And, you know, I kept saying this last year, there were no delusions. There were no, the Raiders are there. We've made it. Like, that's not the message that was coming from the Raiders, even at 6-3. It was more, gosh darn, you know, there's some problems here, you know, got to get those fixed. But they also understood that getting it fixed during the season, it's just too much. During the season, you gotta play with what you have, basically. You're not going to be able to really make a big move to address some major needs during the season. Can guys get better? Yes. Can you get healthier? Of course. Can you do some things schematically to help out? Yeah. But when it's a glaring problem, especially as it relates to talent and maybe guys that just aren't quite ready, that's hard to do during the season. It's something that, and we've talked about this, sometimes you've got to put it off to next year. That's why I know fans, you know, get caught up in the moment and angry and frustrated when things aren't happening. And the first thing that they want to talk about is fire everybody, get rid of everybody. That's not always the right thing to do. Sometimes, and the good organizations understand this, sometimes you get as much work that you can get done by the time the next season rolls around. But you go into that season, if you're, again, self-aware, like, hey, this is what we have to, these are our strengths, these are our weaknesses, this is what we kind of have to coach around, this is what we're going to have to mask, this is what we're going to have to, you know, be able to overcome, we're going to be able to ride this. This is good right here, but this not so good right here. And we're going to have to work around it. We're going to have to, as coaches, try to manage it and mitigate it. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, because rest assured, that team on the other side of the field that scoured over film, breaking it down, understanding, just as much as you do where you are, what do you think they're going to see? What do you think that they want to see? Number one, if you're the other team's defense, you want to figure out what is it that we have to stop? Who do we have to stop? But you're also looking at who do we attack on the offensive line? Who do we get after to get to the quarterback? So you're looking at the other team's strengths and their weaknesses. As an offensive coordinator, when you're looking at the other team's defense, you're looking at who do we got to block? Who do we have to be aware of every single down and try to stay away from and just handle that dude? But also, where's the weak links on the defense? Who do we attack? Who do we go after? Who do we make that other team pay for lining him up against one of our better players? Or how are we going to structure our offense and our packages in order to create the most favorable matchups so one of our better players is being defended by one of their weakest players? So, you know, while you try to kind of mask your weaknesses, while you try to kind of coach around your weaknesses, invariably, the other team is going to know what your weaknesses are, and they're going to go right after it as many times as they possibly can. And if you look at, you know, what the Raiders did last year and how teams were able to kind of chew it up, it's not too difficult to figure out how they were able to do that. Number one, they were operating against a pass rush that was very, very, that was one of the worst in the NFL. And as a result of that, you know, there's young cornerbacks, young secondary members that probably weren't ready to be able to handle that steep of an assignment where you don't have a lot of help from your defensive line. So you're going to have to be like really, really good in terms of defending people for really, really long stretches of time. And that's going to, there's a breaking point. There always is with that. So, you know, and from the Raiders building, they're looking at that and seeing exactly what everybody else is seeing. So they knew what they needed to address. Wasn't able to do it during the season. Again, you coach around that. But off season, that's where you start shoring it all up. And I think the combination of what the Raiders were able to do in free agency, getting Yannick Ngakoue, getting Quentin Jefferson, getting Solomon Thomas, getting Darius Filon, being able to help that defensive line get better, get deeper. What does Gus Bradley keep talking about? Coming at people with waves. The Raiders couldn't do that last year, but they're in a much better position to do that this year. You start adding it all up. Yannick Ngakoue, Max Crosby, Cleve Farrell, Carl Nassib, who actually looked pretty good during OTAs. Maybe Malcolm Kuntz, the rookie from Buffalo. Inside, Quentin Jefferson, Solomon Thomas, Jonathan Hankins, Darius Filon. We're starting to name a bunch of players here, aren't we? Weren't able to do that last year.
And just like John Gruden, you know who you didn't name?
Who's that?
I know you were talking about the pass rush there, but you didn't name Damon Arnett.
Yeah, and you know, I talked about that on Wednesday. I wrote about it on Wednesday, and I talked about it on Wednesday, how conspicuous it's been. Well, first of all, let's back up. Number one, Casey Hayward talking about how he wants to stay on the outside. And as of right now, you have to consider him the starter. And that's a good thing. He's a good player. But what does that mean for Damon Arnett? What did I say last week when I was, when you start realizing, okay, it seems like Casey Hayward's going to be the guy on the outside. Do a little detective work. All right. Texting. So what if maybe Arnett moves inside, kind of follows the same path that Casey Hayward followed, earlier on in his career? Damon Arnett played some inside at Ohio State. What about the possibility of moving Damon Arnett inside right now? And then eventually replacing Casey Hayward. Casey Hayward's getting up there in age. He's got a short shelf life, only on a one-year contract. So is that possible? If I could sum up the reaction to that question, not so sure about that. So then I'm thinking, all right, that doesn't sound too good for Damon Arnett. And we talked about that. And then I wrote about it when John Gruden spoke on Wednesday about how Casey Hayward's not going to just give up his job. And I think we all kind of looked at each other going, okay, it sounds like Casey Hayward's got that job. What does that mean for Damon Arnett? Well, based on the detective work that I did earlier in that week, it doesn't look like moving inside is in the cards for Damon Arnett. Sounds like there's some skepticism. This is what I wrote, some skepticism within the Raider organization that he could pull that off. Lo and behold, we end up talking to Gus Bradley. Hey, I even asked the question, what's the deal in the slot? How's that? Do we have a better definition for the slot for you guys? Well, you know, hey, Nevin Lawson, the veteran, you kind of figure at this stage of his career, at least in terms of getting it and understanding it, he's in the best position right now of that. So if you were going to pencil in a starter, it might be Nevin Lawson, although he's going to be suspended for the first couple of games. So if he holds on to that job, you know, they're going to have to work around that. But then Gus Bradley starts talking about, you know, Amik Robertson. Mentioned Amik Robertson, the fourth round pick last year from Louisiana Tech. But then he's like, but man, the guy that's really impressed us is Nate Hobbs, the rookie from Illinois. A week earlier, maybe 2 weeks earlier, Trayvon Mullen, the veteran cornerback on the other side, when we asked him, hey, who among the young players has impressed you? Nate Hobbs, the guy from Illinois. That dude comes to practice every day ready to work. He practices well. He's prepared. You know, so Gus Bradley mentioned a bunch of defensive backs, never once mentioned Damon Arnett's name. I wrote this. It's a story that's coming out on Sunday, kind of wraps up the whole mini camp. But I went back and looked. I literally went back and looked at all the transcripts to see, was Damon Arnett's name ever mentioned by the coaches, teammates, whatever? Nope, not one time. Now, having said all that, because I'm getting bombarded on Twitter about it, what does that mean for Damon Arnett? Well, as of right now, the Raiders are putting pressure on Damon Arnett to respond. There's work that he needs to do. Will he? Won't he? That's up to Damon Arnett right there. Somebody asked, you know, are they going to just cut ties with him? I find that hard to believe. That's giving up this early on a first-round pick. I don't think so. I think right now what they're doing is challenging him, putting the pressure on him. That's what I wrote earlier this week. He's on notice, and it's going to be up to him to respond. But, you know what's when you're able to do that confidently instead of when you're, like, coddling a guy? It's when you know you have coverage for it. Casey Hayward, that's okay. They're like, okay, I mean, if Damon's ready to go, he's ready to go. That would be great. But if he isn't, we got Casey Hayward, we're good. We'll be all right. And we drafted a bunch of other guys that we like too. So, you know, that's what might be, if you're looking for a difference right now between the Raiders now and the Raiders the last couple of years, and we've talked about this, and John Gruden mentioned it, like, it's going to be the best guy wins. That's it. It doesn't matter where you're drafted. It's not doesn't matter what you're getting paid. It doesn't matter what your clout is. It doesn't matter any of that. And you can say that more confidently when you know that we've got some ball players now. We've got some depth right now. If you're John Gruden and you're Gus Bradley, you've already kind of seen now. That's why, again, I keep going back to this. That's why OTAs are so important, and especially for the Raiders. Don't forget, last year, there were no OTAs. It was literally everybody showed up the first day of training camp, did like a 5 days of conditioning or something like that before they were even able to get on the field. Then they were able to get on the field and the ramp-up period. Remember the ramp-up period? And then, you can put the pads on now, finally. That was the first time John Gruden and his staff got a chance to see their whole team. And Damon Arnett was the day one starter at cornerback. Prince Akamura, who they had signed, he just, you know, he was over there on the sidelines, standing around, watching around a lot. And to be honest, I thought Damon Arnett looked good in that setting. But then there were obviously some setbacks, and he didn't come back the same guy. And you know, at the time I wrote about it, and we talked about it on the radio last year, when he came back, I'll never forget seeing him that first time back on the field after 9 weeks. And I just remember looking at him going, wow, this guy looks completely different. He just wasn't as strong, wasn't as big. You know, and that wasn't necessarily his fault, because, you know, he couldn't get in the weight room consistently. But saying all that, I don't think this is the end of the line. I'd be shocked if this was the end of the line for Damon Arnette. Sometimes you got to poke and prod a little bit and fire some people up. Damon Arnette's got talent. He can play football. But there's not going to be any gimmies. When we talked about this, how a year ago the Raiders might have been thinking more about development than that might have been higher on the list of things. Not anymore. They want to win football games, and it's going to be the best players that prove that in practice and in training camp. That's who's going to play on Sundays, because they want to win football games. Hey, development, so be it. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila and Bahadur. Give us a call, 702-365-9200.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
We're going to go right out to the Raider Nation listener line. Justin wants to talk about the starting secondary. Well, how are you doing, Justin?
Hey, Vinny. Happy Friday, brother. What's going on? Is it beer 30 yet?
It's about, what time is it right now? We're about 90 minutes away from that.
Gotcha. Hey, I was going to ask you about the secondary, but you kind of just covered it before the break. Just want to touch on Arnette real quick, and then I have a question for you about Hobbs. You know, just from the outsider looking in, the optics really don't look good on Arnette. I know it's too quick to judge a guy after a year. I definitely don't think they should release him or trade him or anything like that. Definitely give him every single opportunity he can to start and to, you know, make a difference on this team. And I'm not saying the player has to be posting, "I love Raiders, I'm working out every single day" on social media. That's not a prerequisite. But, you know, he had his rap career going on, and then it doesn't appear that he came into OTAs and to mini camp in the shape that they wanted him to. And I read that Athletic article that came out on him today, and just other stuff about him not looking, you know, ready to go, essentially. And I know it's early. I know it's still June and whatnot. But, you know, first-round picks like that, you definitely want those to be the leaders of your team and the guys setting the example for everybody else, and not the guys that, you know, you're kind of waiting on to figure out if they're going to get it or not. Anyways, that's my two cents on that. And as far as the Hobbs kid, I've heard from the pressers, coaches, a couple players even, you know, specifically mentioning the kid's name. I'm just curious if what you've seen on the practice field, if he really is standing out so far.
A couple of things on Arnette. I thought he looked bigger and stronger to me. But what was conspicuous, his body looked different than what it was at the end of the season, and that's understandable. He was able to kind of get more into the weight room and you know work on things. But what was conspicuous when you would watch the DBs, he did a lot of standing around and watching, kind of observing. And I thought, was thinking to myself, okay, well maybe they're just trying to let him watch it so that he can understand it a little bit better. But, you know, as the days went on, it just was a little bit conspicuous. It's hard to read anything into that. You know, you don't want to read something into it that it's not, but it definitely went into the brain. You know, like I was like, okay, that looks a little bit different. Then, you know, some of what I was talking about earlier with, well, hey, maybe can he move to the slot cornerback position? And just the general skepticism in the response back, I felt like, okay, they're not really feeling too good about that, about moving Damon Arnette there. So, okay, where does that leave Damon Arnette? And so that's where we kind of are. I do think that they're trying to push some buttons. I think they're in a better position to do that because they do have Casey Hayward and they feel like they have some players that are going to be able to man that slot position. So they're not in any kind of a desperation mode to play Damon Arnette or anybody else just because they drafted him in the first round. There's not going to be any gimmies right now. And that's a good thing. That's a sign of strength. Otherwise they would just play him because they kind of have to, and they want to try to justify the pick and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see where that goes. And nobody's, you know, like I saw the rap album and everything like that. And I go back to when Shaquille O'Neal was doing all the offseason stuff that he was doing. And I remember talking to Phil Jackson about that when he was the head coach of the Lakers. He's like, look, I'll worry about that when he's not scoring 35 points a game, grabbing 16 rebounds. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're able to do everything and still produce, who cares what you're doing off the court?
Right. But that's Shaq and Shaq.
Exactly.
Exactly. And I hear what you're saying, brother, but like, at the same time, there is an expectation that comes with first rounders, and you know where you know we've had the Cleveland Farrell argument before, and I think you definitely have a great argument on that. But you know,
what I'm saying is,
no,
I'm agreeing
he's saying
with,
if you're not an All Pro, you can't have fun in the offseason.
That's not what we're saying either. But I actually agree with you, Justin. I think if you could do whatever you want, but this is a grown up world here. Your main job, you have to perform in your main job. It doesn't matter. I don't care what you do on the off season, and neither do the Raiders, as long as it's, you know, obviously legal and all that kind of stuff. But you have to perform, and if you don't perform, if you're not ready to go, if you're not ready to play, if you're not living up to the expectations, the first thing everyone's going to look at, and rightfully so, is, well, what are you putting enough time into it? And that's just the way the world works. And if you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's you have to perform. That's your primary function. You're getting paid a lot of money to do that. There's expectations that exist. And I'm not blaming anything on whatever it is that he does, in the off season. But it's going to get brought up if he doesn't perform. That's just the way the world works. There's plenty of guys. I mean, if you want to know what Kobe Bryant was able to balance everything in the off season with also getting better all the time, there's a balance that exists. But if you're paying, if it's unbalanced, that's going to show on the field at this level. I'll tell you that right now, brother, you're going to get exposed if you're not putting in the necessary work, in your off time and balancing off time and fun time correctly. The good ones know how to do that. And it's on Damon Arnette to kind of get himself back on track here, because right now it looks like he's fallen behind. Now he's got a lot of time left to get it figured out, and I think right now the Raiders are kind of prodding him a little bit. We'll see if he responds. The good ones do, like Derek Carr was telling me about, you know, Henry Ruggs. He's like, look, something clicked in his head, as it does often for first-year players who now have a year to look back on and film to look on and now can say, okay, I get it. This is what you have to do at this level to get better. And Derek was, the good ones do, the bad ones don't. That's just how it works. This is the real world. And he said, it sure looks like Henry said, I'm going to be one of those guys that do. I'm going to be one of those guys that heeds all the recommendations and see what I need to work on and work on it and get better at it. Maybe Damon Arnette is like that. Maybe he isn't. We'll see. But nobody's going to be crying. Nobody's going to be – that train's going to keep rolling down the tracks with him or without him, and it's up to him to catch up. Real quick, we're going to go out to BP Well wants to talk about strength and conditioning coach involvement. How you doing, BP Well? BP Well has.
Well, that's perfect. We can get to our
guest.
He's
hung up on us. That's okay, because we're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our very good friend, a colleague of mine, and he works over at ESPN. He covers the Raiders and many other things and does it at a very, very high level. Paul Gutierrez, you can follow him at P Gutierrez ESPN. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, man. I'm doing better than BT Well, who's BT gone. So
I know.
Trying to stay cool in this heat. I'm actually back up in Northern California, and it's triple digits here as well. So it's all over the place, but it's interesting. Like, yeah, I caught the end of that conversation about guys wanting to do things off the field in their off seasons. And you know, you're right. There is a balance. It's the yin and yang of life, right? Anything falls out of balance, that whole thing falls apart. And, you know, the bottom line, in my opinion, and what, you know, you and I have been doing this in this business a long time and in talking to people, it's not just performing, it's producing. And it's doing things at that high level. And that's why the Bo Jacksons, the Deion Sanders, the Brian Jordans, those guys are playing two sports at high levels and excelling and being able to get away with it. And yet, you know, there's always a negative to it too. So it, the bottom line is, yeah, you can have some fun, but don't forget what your day job is and what puts you in position to have that fun.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we mentioned Shaquille. Obviously, it's Shaquille. But, you know, what I said about Phil Jackson is, like, I'll worry about what he does off the court. I'll worry about the rap albums and the movies and all that if he's not averaging 35 and 16, you know, and 5 every single night. Like, it obviously doesn't affect him on the court. Whether it's affecting Damon Arnett, we don't know. And I know you noticed the same thing. We talked to the same people. Obviously, Gus Bradley didn't mention his name, neither did John Gruden. No one we talked to among the players on Zoom, you know, really ever had much to say about Damon. It looked kind of weird and conspicuous. He was doing a lot of watching during OTAs for some reason. But from your perspective, and I haven't really talked to you about this, what do you think is going on with Damon Arnett?
Well, I mean, it's kind of what you referenced with Henry Ruggs, what Derek Carr told you about him, too, is that for a lot of these guys, the light either goes on or it doesn't, and you see it as it goes on. You know, and when you look at last year's draft class, this is basically their rookie year 2.0 because they didn't have any offseason program. They just showed up and started playing, and a lot of these guys, it showed. It showed with Damon Arnett especially. Now, big physical corner, that's what they liked, that's what they wanted. But it was stunning last year to see the lack of form tackling technique. He was knocking himself out of games because he was leading with his head. He was getting penalties, things like that. And maybe that's what this offseason is for him, that it is truly a learning period. And the Raiders didn't mention him by name by design. It did look like he was just doing a lot of milling around, watching things. And, you know, the fact that John Gruden name drops Hobbs in the middle of all that, when he says, I don't care who plays, I don't care if it's Nate Hobbs, I don't care if it's this guy, that guy, the other guy, he basically is sending out a warning flare to these guys. Doesn't matter where you were drafted, you got to go out there and produce and perform and show that you belong here. You know, glass being half full kind of a thing, maybe that's what this is for Damon Arnett, is that, look, just sit back, enjoy, quote-unquote enjoy, your first real off season where we can get our hands on you and teach you and learn, and you'll be able to get some things done. And then once training camp comes, then you take the gloves off, so to speak, and you go from there.
Could we make a case here too that it's a lot easier to be able to, whether we're talking about tough love or whether you're like you mentioned, you know, maybe he's on a development track right now where there's watching and learning and all of that. And that's it's an excellent point. But could we make the argument that the Raiders are in a better position now to do that because they've got Casey Hayward, they've got Douglas, they've got, maybe they found a gem in Nate Hobbs. Like they feel like they're operating at a much more level of strength. It's not just handing Damon Arnett the starting job because he's the 19th pick overall last year and got to get him on the development track. They're trying to win games. They feel like that position is covered with or without Damon Arnett. And to me, that's kind of a sign of progress almost in a weird sort of a way.
Yeah, and that's one way to look at it. And if you those guys you mentioned, what is the common thread with all of them? They've had an off-season program before. Casey Hayward is an established starter in the NFL who knows this defense. You know, this is Casey Hayward playing the role of Richard Sherman, which I thought Richard Sherman would be that guy, and maybe some others did as well, to come in, teach these guys not only the defense, but how to be a pro. That's taking care of your body. That's taking care of your stuff off the field. That's learning how to tackle without leading with your head, so that you're taking care of your body and you can keep playing and you can stay on the field. Because last year, remember, in training camp, what was the buzzword? It was the best ability is availability. And that was thrown all over Jonathan Abram. Now that Abram label is kind of getting thrown at Damon Arnett. We'll see how they each respond to that. But you're right. I mean, with Casey Hayward there and Trayvon Mullen with another year under his belt and Amik Robertson kind of falls in that same boat because everybody thought by now he would have locked up that nickel slot, right? And just hasn't happened yet. But again, this is his first true offseason program. just like Damon Arnett, just like Henry Ruggs.
Absolutely. And we're talking to Paul Gutierrez from ESPN. You can follow him at P. Gutierrez, ESPN. One thing that I saw during OTAs and minicamp, especially when Unique Ngakoue showed up and especially when Quentin Jefferson showed up, the defensive line, whether it works on the field, obviously that remains to be seen. But it definitely looks different right now compared to at any point last year. It looks deeper. It looks more talented. Max Crosby, it looks like he's in great shape. I think the work that the Raiders put into that position showed up in minicamp. What's your perspective of what really is a critical part of Gus Bradley's defense and the Raiders needing to get to the quarterback more than they did last year?
Well, I think number one is it's a mentality, right? And, you know, we've been around this organization long enough to remember Al Davis running this thing. And when Al Davis's dictation to the defense was the quarterback within the first series, the quarterback must go down, he must go down hard. This is kind of a callback to that where you can just throw in waves of guys and keep going. And Gus Bradley mentioned that he wants to have two or three lines that in his defense could serve as a first team line. And whether it's a run defense or a pass defense, it's real interesting to me that Cleveland Ferrell was another guy whose name was not really uttered much at all. And I did ask Gus about him when we're talking. And I asked Unique Ngakoue about him. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting the way he saw him as kind of like a guy that's going to contribute. Do you want to say that about a guy who was a number four overall draft pick? No, but then you look at what Max Crosby became much later in the draft, and he's now your guy. So all these things kind of even out in the wash. You do wish you would have gotten that game changer at number four, but it is what it is. And to me, what Gus Bradley said, the truest thing he may have said was that for the defense in general, it's a race to maturity. And as soon as these guys mature, that's when they're actually going to click. That's when they're going to get it, especially on that defensive line. When you got just an army of guys that just keep coming at you and coming at you and coming at you, it's going to be interesting to see how many of these guys stay healthy and how many of these guys make the roster, because, you know, we're already at that part of the offseason where we're working on our preseason previews. I'm not going to have a lot of fun trying to figure out and predict a defensive line, because there's so many guys that can contribute and have contributed in the past.
It's so weird you should say that, because my next question was, who do you think the starting defensive line is going to be? If you were to, and I know it's only June 18th, but and I swear to you, that was my next question, because you mentioned Clee and Max Crosby, Unique Ngakoue, Clee Farrell, those are the three prominent defensive ends on this team now. How do you see that shaking out? I mean, do you think that? Like, I think Klee's going to start, and I think Unique and Max are going to share the load, and they're going to utilize them all over the place and on the field together, sometimes replacing each other. But how do you think the defensive line, especially that defensive end positions, will play out?
Well, you know, Hankins is going to get one of those interior starting jobs.
Yes. And
I'm not sure who that other is. Is it going to be Solomon Thomas? Do they show a different look? Because, again, we're talking about a guy who was an architect of the Legion of Boom, right?
Yep.
And those weren't big monsters up front. The Legion of Boom, because of their coverage skills and the fear they put into receivers going across the middle, helped out the defensive line. And it works both ways, obviously. I would not be shocked if you saw both Crosby and Ngakoue starting on the outside, and you saw Hankins, and they throw Cleland inside just to mix it up. Is he big enough to play one of the D tackles, a three technique? I don't think so. I don't know, not four down, not three downs anyways. But it would be interesting to see him just to take advantage of his athleticism down low, especially if that secondary can buy enough time for the defensive line to get through and create a little bit of havoc. That, to me, is kind of the bold prediction right now, is that would be the starting defensive line. Max, Crosby, Jonathan Hankins, Clee Farrell, and Ngakoue. Again, don't go to the casino with that, but that's kind of my bold prediction right here, right now.
I like it. I like it a lot. And we're talking to Paul Gutierrez from ESPN. You can follow him at P. Gutierrez ESPN. On the other side of the ball, Derek Carr declared his everlasting love for the Raiders this week. I was on another radio show with Rodney Pete and Fred Rogan in Los Angeles, and they're like, "Are you? If he got traded or whatever happened, his contract ran out. Are you sitting here saying that he wouldn't play with somebody else? I was like, I'm not going to say that. I don't think Derek Carr would say that. I don't think that's really what he meant. I think what he meant was this is where he wants to be, and he made that very clear. And it was based off a very specific question about what's going on around the league with Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson and some other players in some other sports. But what did you make of what Derek Carr said? And are we to take it, you know, at face value that this is really and truly where he wants to be, and he doesn't have any eyes on anywhere else around the league? This is where he wants to be.
Well, I believe that. I also believe that everything Derek says, he says for a reason. Remember, this is a guy that we haven't spoken to in a public setting since the season ended. And there's been times when the season has ended, when the quarterback, the face of the franchise, has not been made available after a season for the season-ending autopsy. So anytime he does make an appearance for the first time, anything he says is going to be amplified. And he knows that. And if there's one thing I've seen about Derek, and this doesn't make, you know, this is not negative at all, he's very calculated. So while he was also, you know, like you said, proclaiming his undying love for everything silver and black and Raider Nation and the coaches and the players and the owner and the GM, he was also torpedoing his own trade value. Because which team in their right mind would want to trade for him if it ever came to that? If he says, no, it's already on the record that he's not going to come play for anybody else. Do you believe that? Do I believe that? No, absolutely not. But it was very strategic, and it was put out there, and it blew up. I know it generated millions of hits on well, maybe not millions, but a lot of hits on ESPN.com, and generated definitely a lot of interest league-wide for him to say something like that. But, you know, that's how he felt at that moment and at that time. And there's a lot of other things that he said, too. And you know, when you talk to Derek, he'll say his message, and then he kind of keeps going. And it's like, okay, well, stay on topic, stay on target, and, you know, you'll get that point across. But when he went on about growing up, you know, he didn't have much. His mom was a substitute teacher. His dad sold cars, and I don't have much. I don't need much. Well, this is coming from a guy who was 12 years old when his brother became a multimillionaire by being the number one pick in the NFL draft. And also, oh, yeah, was at one time the highest paid football player in NFL history when he signed that extension. So a lot of it is to be taken with a grain of salt. A lot of it, though, you kind of look behind the curtain. Aha, that's what he means.
Yeah, and as you told me in a later conversation, you know, he could retire tomorrow and play golf for the rest of his life. So,
sure.
You know, is money a motivating factor? On the surface, no. But like anybody else, he wants to get paid. And that's my next question. Because let's face it, and let's be honest about this. He's got 2 years left on his contract, this year included, but none of it is guaranteed. And by today's standards, he's probably slightly underpaid. Where he is as a quarterback, where the quarterback pay level is, he falls underneath it, probably considerably so. It doesn't appear that the Raiders are in much of a rush to change that. And right now, they're in a pretty good position, not having to pay their quarterback $35 million like some other quarterbacks are being paid. But if you were the Raiders, is that something that you're entertaining right now? Or are you just waiting for this contract to run out and see where you are at that point before making a decision on that?
To me, the interesting thing about it is it kind of goes back to last year when I know – and I had heard and was told that there were, you know, preliminary discussions about the extension last year. And it just kind of fell apart. It didn't happen, obviously. And I know you wrote a story in the offseason where Derek's stock was at an all-time high, so to speak. And I looked at that. And again, I kind of, you know, you clear the look at the tea leaves and say, okay, well, who would want his stock to be at an all-time high? Well, Derek Carr would, and his agent would, and his people would. And you kind of go from there. From the Raider perspective, what's interesting to me is the fact that they brought Marcus Mariota back. And the fact that they didn't play Marcus against the Dolphins in that game at the end of the year when Derek suffered the strain groin, Marcus came in, no first-team reps or anything, and played well and should have beaten the Chargers in that game. But then they roll with Derek again. Because if Marcus comes in and plays well again, then it's like, okay, well, we can move on and we'll pay a lot less and have more money to address other things. But this is Derek's team. He has not been a negative influence off the field at all. There's a lot of things that are left to be desired by a lot of fans. And you know, I did a thing with Kirk Morrison today, former longtime Raider. And I told him, I said, man, I've never seen a more polarizing figure in Raider history. meaning people either love him or they despise him. There's no in between. You know, when Jamarcus Russell was here, everybody pretty much fell into the same camp. When Todd Marinovich was the quarterback, he was kind of a sympathetic figure, and you saw people falling that way as well. With Derek, it's one or the other. And when he says something like that, you wonder how it does affect the organization. And I don't think that they're necessarily in a rush. But the longer they do wait, they have to know that that price tag goes up as long as he plays well, and he should, because he's got all the weapons in the world around him that he needs. The big question, and I don't even know if you've used the word excuse, but we got to see how this offensive line plays now in front of him, because that is the unknown factor that can be contribute to either his continued ascent or his ultimate downfall.
I completely agree, and it does seem like there could be a little bit of a gamble that the Raiders are taking, because obviously they want him to play well. Obviously they want the offensive line to play well. They want to push through and make the playoffs. And if that happens and he plays well again, like you said, the price tag only goes up. But I would imagine at that point, if it got to that, it's money that they would be happy to spend if they were able to break through and get further than they have been, get to the postseason and build a sturdier foundation here. Paul, it's always a pleasure, talking to you. Try to stay cool. I know it's hot even up there in the Bay Area. Go enjoy a cold one later on tonight and cool down, and we're going to do the same over here. Appreciate you, brother.
Sounds good, man. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out when you and I became the guys that come out and yell at kids, get off our lawns, because that was a time when we would be like, go do it, go do the rap albums, do everything else, and now we're kind of like, oh, I don't know, go wear your heels.
Exactly. And we're not even saying that. We're just saying, oh, you can right. do that, just also perform. Know what the day job is. That's all there is to it, man. Thanks a lot, Paul, man. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, Vinny, take care.
You too, man. That's Paul Gutierrez from ESPN. Always enjoy talking to him. Always enjoy hanging out with them. We go back a long, long way, and you can follow him at P. Gutierrez ESPN. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now, back to your host, Vinny Bonsignor.
Hey guys, I just wanted to remind you about the Father's Day special, Latin Night Father's Day, from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Over at our good friend Gus's Casa Amigos restaurant over at 3740 East Flamingo Road. 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Casa Amigos, Latin Night. Great food. Great music, obviously, and all the Embajador tequila that you can drink. Embajador tequila is teaming up with Casa Amigos to put that great event on. And don't forget tonight from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. over at Michael T's Steak and Burgers here in Las Vegas. Michael T's is having Aloha Night tonight, Friday night, 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. Live music from 9 p.m. to midnight, and then midnight to 3 a.m. You've got the karaoke and the live Hawaiian DJ. So, and of course, Embajador Tequila puts that together as well. Always a great night. Friday night, and then on Sunday night over at Casa Amigos at 3740 East Flamingo Road here in Las Vegas. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Mitch is in New Jersey. How are you doing, Mitch?
How's it going, Vinny? Happy Father's Day to you and everybody else here.
You too, brother.
Thank you. Boy, you really live in a entertainment capital, boy. All these places. I don't know when was the last time I went to these restaurants. But anyway, it sounds like you can't help but have a nice time in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Cars, right.
Oh, yes.
Hey, has any new Raider taken any single-digit numbers? I should be aware, or under 20?
No, it looks like that ship has sailed. Remember, what we talked about was, if you were going to change your number this year, it was going to cost you a lot of money to go buy back the jerseys, that are still in stock right now that have your current number. Okay. However, if you learn, I have a feeling you're going to start seeing, players switch to the single, you know, if they want switch those single digit numbers starting next year, because if you notify the league right now that you want to make that switch for next year, it's not going to cost you any money. You don't have to go buy out the remaining stock. It was only for this year if you made the change. So some of the players, like, you know, I think Jalen Ramsey, who is making a whole bunch of money, and rightfully so, he's one of the best in the business. He's in a better position to be able to pay that off. Plus, his jerseys sell, so there are probably less jerseys still left on the stock. You know, when
number
when
five.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I there weren't anybody, you know, nothing new on that front for the Raiders.
I was thinking about the rookies, and I saw DeSean Jackson, number one, and I think Akers changed to three with the Rams. I know you cover all three of them, but the Rays are the best. I want to say Henry Ruggs. I think he's going to have a big year. I think Tim Brown's probably the best rate of all-time wide receiver back in my mind. Holds me correct, and also Cliff Branch. And those who should aspire. And I'm hoping Solomon Thomas, is off the field. He seems like a smart guy. Very unfortunate that it's a problem in this country. I hope kind of hits home a little bit. I worry about my daughter in that department, but I don't want to weigh you down here. But I'm just saying, I think you can have a breakout year. I think he's still young. I know he's always going to have it on his shoulders and his mind, but I hope he can be a star this year.
Well, you know, and all the best to you and your family, Mitch. You know where I'm coming from on that. It's interesting that you mentioned Tim Brown, because if you look at Tim Brown, it took him a little while to turn that corner. First year with the Raiders, he played in 16 games, started 9, 43 receptions. In 1989, I don't know if there was a strike or what, but anyway, he only played in one game, so the numbers are useless at that point. In 1990, he played in 16 games, didn't start, 18 receptions. In 1991, 16 games, one start, 36 receptions. And then 1992, 15 games, 12 starts, 49 receptions. It wasn't until 1993 where he went on a major, major run. And this was 6 years into his career. Then he went on an 80 catch, 1,100 yard season, 89 for 1,300 yards, 89 for 1,342, 90 for 1,104, 104 for 1,408, 81 for 1,012, 90 for 1,344, 76 for 1,128, 91 for 1,165, 81 for 930. So, you know, I'm not saying that Henry Ruggs is going to turn into Tim Brown, but the whole thing about him starting a little bit slowly in his career, it's not all that unusual, especially with the kind of offseason that they had last year. And as Tim Brown showed, it took a little while. But once he got rolling, he rolled right into the Hall of Fame. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila and Bahadur. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT. Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.